Are we gonna do what they say can't be done?
Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I am Mark Cook, along with former Man Bun himself. Now, I don't know, we're going to call it a Backstreet Boys haircut.
It's been a while since you've at least, you know,
acknowledged
what was the Man Bun. I appreciate you bringing it up.
It looks great compared to the Man Bun. Of course, well, you know, anything would look better.
Yeah, of course. I was going to say, of course you said it. It's almost like a backhanded compliment right there.
And, of course, Scott's with us as well. Say hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
See, that's Hi Scott. Whoa, that's not the Scott. That's another Scott. We're going to welcome aboard for this edition, for part of it anyway, Mr. Scott Smith, longtime writer extraordinaire for Buccaneers.com. Scott has worked for the team since 1974 when it was announced that they were getting a franchise in Tampa.
I got to choose the name, actually.
Yeah, that's right. You did. You designed the logo, Buccaneer. Yep. Bruce. Scott actually drew that out in fourth grade. But no, Scott's been with the team since what, mid-90s?
1992.
Wow. 92. I was a young buck, Trevor. I was only 22.
How old do you think I was?
You weren't even born yet.
Were you born?
I was one. I was less than one.
God.
I was less than 1 year old.
Get him out of here. Call security.
Me. He's sitting over there in the big chair like this is like the king.
Yeah, well. Again, we'll, since you don't, we tell everybody that joins us on the podcast, Trevor's the most important person in this podcast only because he's the only one that knows how to run the equipment.
That's
if he dies, the podcast is over. Scott and I, we're too old to learn technology.
You guys can figure it out. Mm-mm. No, you're
no.
right. You probably can't.
No, we would just talk into our phone and record it that way.
I notice I got the mic with the orange cover, so I'm like the quarterback here, right?
Yes.
I just can't hold orange, and he's got the blue mic cover, and
see,
so it's just
Gator colors, yeah. And that really bothers him. So every now and then I'll get, wait, who are you?
I went to Northwestern, but I much prefer Florida State over Florida.
Oh, okay.
Hey-o. See, 2-1.
Huh.
You're always gay.
Well, then I'm glad I gave him the orange.
Wait a second.
That's normally how
I do. Wait a second.
It.
That's a blue mic. Is that Kentucky blue?
Oh.
Oh.
All right.
Ouch.
Never mind. Podcast is
how
over.
How old were you 31 years ago?
Podcast is over.
But, Scott, well, appreciate everybody. You joining us, man. Since 1992, that was not Richard Williams. That was Sam's
first year. It was
Sam's
the first
year.
Sam Weich. Wow. He and I were a package deal back then.
Yeah, you came along with him, did you?
Mm-hmm.
Was this
actually, I'll tell you a true story.
Okay.
I was living in Phoenix. I had an internship with the Chiefs in 91, and it ended.
What about
and
to ask you?
I moved to Phoenix, and I was living with my dad there for a little while when the Buccaneers and Rick Odioso, you know who that is, was the PR director at the time, when he called me and scheduled an interview, and it went fine on the phone. And, you know, I didn't have an internet to look anything up at the time. And I flew into Tampa for an in-person interview, and he picked me up, and he said something about, I just got here because I was with Sam on this whistle stop tour they were doing, to, you know, trying to drum up fans around the area. And he says, Sam, I had no idea who he was talking about. I mean, I was totally not prepared for this interview at all. I guess I faked it. Okay, I didn't know the Bucks had just hired a new head coach.
Right.
But I mean, I was going to come in and take an interview with anybody that would give me an interview.
You know, I was telling somebody the other day, and she had no idea what I was talking about because she's much younger. I was telling her that I was watching an old game from the 90s. And I think it was on TNT. I think it was a game with Marino quarterbacking, maybe. And they kept scrolling on the bottom for updated scores. Call the 1976, 50 cents a minute.
Whoa!
And that's because, Trevor, there was no internet. And so we would have to wait till the next morning to
even
find out
who
won games a lot
of
times.
Yeah, we'd read the newspaper.
I mean, that's how I played fantasy football. I remember my first year, 1995, and really you waited till Monday morning.
Yeah, and somebody did the stats and sent them out to everybody.
Yeah.
In 91, when I was with the Chiefs, fantasy football was just starting to blow up, and there was no internet, and people didn't understand really what the injury report meant, and they would call the PR department of the Chiefs all day on Friday.
Oh my gosh.
How is Christian Okoye? Did he practice today? What's he on the injury report?
That's awesome.
Can you tell me if he's going to play? And I'd be like, I can't. He's questionable on the injury report. That's all I can tell you. And on. And I was the intern, so I had to fill all these.
Trevor has
that must
no
have been miserable.
It was
have
terrible.
No idea what life was like back then. We drank out of water hoses. There was no water bottles, right, Scott? If you were thirsty, there's a sink.
Hey, I worked landscaping, so I've drank out of plenty of spigots before.
Well, that's true. Know? Spigot. Hey, that's a good word. I'm surprised you know that.
There you go. No, you can't drink through the hose, because if you drink through the hose, there's lizards going there, and they poop in there.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt.
I had no idea we were going to be talking about lizards pooping in holes.
Yeah. We talk little about football on this podcast, and that's probably why everybody hates us, but we're going to get to some football now. You know, we mentioned you've been doing this for a long time, Scott. First of all, give us your official title. I always forget those things.
I have to think about it for a second. I'm serious. Senior writer and editor.
Okay.
Okay.
That's fancy. And if you're a Bucs fan, you got to check out Buccaneers.com. You know, I check it out daily.
I mean, if you're not, what are you doing?
Exactly.
You know,
you're not listening.
We like for you guys to listen to Peter Report and everything, but like, come on, Bucs.com. Yeah. You gotta get both. After
you look at PeterReport.com, go right to Buccaneers.com. Yeah. That was what we
see
were
if
recommend
we're telling
doing.
The truth.
Right.
If I can plug something new that I just did the last 2 weeks, a new series called Signature Play, where we look at one play that the other team's offense does very well and does a lot.
Nice.
Today, I just posted the one today. It's actually the play they used for the winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, and it's like I had to make up the name for it because I don't know what they call it, but cluster right, tight end split, flexed out left, and that's Zach Ertz out there.
Right.
And they have the three guys over here on the right in that bunch formation with one guy on the line and two flanking him. And then there's one running back in the backfield, and in the Super Bowl that was Corey Clement.
Right.
And they motion him to the right, and that brought this – there was a safety that was shading towards where Ertz was one-on-one with Devin McCourty. Mm-hmm. They decided to put a safety on him and a much smaller guy than him too. And
Safety on Ertz?
Ertz.
Yes. Okay.
One-on-one and not in press coverage, which is big because that's really the way to not that it's easy to stop Zach Ertz, but it's if you can manage to disrupt his route right at the beginning,
then you got
that's
a chance
helpful.
For the pass rush to get home. Right?
Yeah, and especially in this near the goal line, quick hitting play where they're isolated one-on-one. Well, when Clement sprints out to the right, the safety follows him, and so you truly have Devin McCourty and Zach Ertz alone on this entire half of the field. They just ran a quick slant underneath them, and McCourty, you know, trying to follow him, kind of trips all over himself and catch, touchdown, game-winning touchdown.
That's kind of a good place to where we can actually start to talk football on the podcast. Now, like, everybody knows who's followed the Buccaneers for the last couple of years, they're emphasizing tight ends a lot. Dirk Cutter, you know, when he came in to be in his offense, you know, he had ASJ for that first little stint at the beginning, and then obviously getting Cam Brate, growing him into that role, getting O.J. Howard because now they have two tight ends.
And, of course, you forgot about the powerful master, the pass-catching, the tight end machine, Luke Stocker.
I thought you were going to plug Alan Cross there. But
either way, okay. About the same.
Sure.
About the same career touchdowns.
That's true.
How much do you think it helps that the Buccaneers have such great tight ends in their own offense when they're preparing for guys like Zach Ertz? Do you think it helps a lot?
I think it's got to help a ton. I mean, think about this game we just played. It wasn't the tight ends. I mean, O.J. Howard made a couple really nice plays, but most of the damage was done by your outside guys.
Right.
And all the coaches have been saying all week that they got a lot more one-on-ones with those guys, man-to-man coverage than they expected, and I think that's because you can spread weapons all over the field. I mean, you got to worry about O.J. Howard. You can put him in line or in the slot. Cam Brate, you can put him in the slot. And we had 35 different lineup combinations in that, 34 different lineup combinations in that game, which was the second most of any team in the league this week. And, you know, part of
the most?
Huh?
Who had
Baltimore,
the most?
Baltimore.
Oh.
And I'm guessing part of that, you know, we put Evan Smith in there for a little bit, so that sort of doubles it all.
Yeah. Right.
Because you get all of those twice.
Right. Yep.
But still, it was a lot of combinations. And, so you're presenting them with a lot of different things, and because your tight ends are potentially so effective, I think it's hard to deal with.
No, it isn't. And another thing it does, just from a pre-snap situation when you've got two tight ends on the field, you know, it really makes the offense, I mean the defense, question, you know, run or pass, right?
I mean,
you know, they almost have to stay in a base as opposed to going in a nickel when you have two tight ends a lot of times. I mean, depending on the defensive coordinator, but if I was a defensive coordinator, I would want to have that extra linebacker on the field.
Yeah.
You know, if you see two tight ends out there.
Yeah. Well, let's just to give you a good example, I'll go back to that play from the Eagles I was talking about. They lost Trey Burton, but they got Dallas Goedert.
Goddard's good.
Okay, and he's good.
Right? He was to my tight end one in the draft. So
they still use a lot of two tight ends with two guys that other defenses have to worry about.
Yeah.
And in that play, so you come out there on the field. You know how it is. You see the defensive coaches. They're watching when they see a certain package come out on the field, they send our certain package.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so you see 12 personnel, which is one back and two tight ends,
right,
which can very easily be a powerful running formation.
Sure.
So you kind of almost have to stay in base there, right? So the Patriots defense on that play was still in base, and they you know, so they end up with a safety covering the tight end.
Sure.
But the plays spread out more like an 11 personnel. I mean, you got a bunch of trips over here and another good pass catcher over there. The Bucs can do the same thing.
And, right. And again, the disguise and the fact with the Buccaneers, with the fact they have Cameron Brate and O.J. Howard, both good pass catching guys. I'm not knocking Luke Stalker. I love Luke Stalker, one of my favorite guys to talk to and deal with within the media. But if you had two Luke Stalkers, for instance, that's not scaring you, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you know it's going to be a 90% chance that's going to be a run if you see double tights.
Yeah,
and it's that tight. But when you've got guys like O.J. and Cam, you know, that are receiving threats as well, it certainly creates more confusion for the coordinators.
I was thinking about this. You know, we're recording this on a Thursday here, One Buck Place. We recorded it right after
Advent Health.
With Advent Health Training Facility.
On John McKay practice field. At Lehman Bennett Stadium,
United States of America. I totally forgot. No, okay. So he was talking about, one of the questions was about Zach Ertz. You know, obviously because he's a big weapon for the Philadelphia Eagles, and I think the question that was asked of him was, hey, you know, you go up against a guy like Greg Olsen and the Panthers twice a year. Does that help you planning for Zach Ertz? And here I am thinking in the back of my head, I was like, oh, you know, that's a good way to look at it. And then I thought, man, there's really good tight ends like everywhere in the league. Travis Kelce, Jimmy Graham,
sure.
David Njoku, Evan Ingram. Obviously, you've got Zach Ertz in Philadelphia, and then Trey Burton, he goes on to another team. And so it's like you've got these mismatched kind of personnel. So this is taking the league by storm, and I almost feel more and more bad for guys like Mike Smith because it's tough.
And these are hybrid. They're tight ends, but boy, really.
They're just giant receivers.
They're giant receivers.
They
Again,
the,
Scott
they're
remembers
freaks,
the days of Jimmy Giles and things like that. You know, the big
Jimmy
guys.
Jimmy Graham was so much like a what do we do every week.
He started that whole trend.
He really did. I mean, you had Gonzalez, but then Jimmy Graham kind of turned into more of that, hey, let's split this guy out, put him in the slot, and use him really as a third or a fourth receiver a lot of times.
When I
played football, you put the smallest offensive lineman, the smallest unathletic guy, as your tight end, right? I mean, you're not big enough to be an offensive lineman, but you're not fast enough to be a receiver, so you're a tight end.
It used to be less big offensive lineman, like you just said, is a tight end.
Right.
Now, it's your biggest receiver is your tight end.
Yeah.
You know, like Mike Evans could have played, you know, like tight end in high school. You know, they just throw on a couple more pounds on him when he gets to college, and he could have very easily been a tight end. You just teach him how to do that. And so it gets really tough for defenses, though, because like Scott was just breaking down there on the personnel that you have to try to match with.
Sure.
You know, I've talked about the wanting Mike Smith to get a little bit more aggressive in what he does, but for defense – the motto is true that you're only as strong as your weakest link. And if you try to play man coverage or single high or whatever it is, and you have one linebacker / nickel corner that can't cover tight ends, all of a sudden you can't play aggressive against like half the teams in the NFL.
That's true.
It's tough. Really tough.
Yeah, it really is. Scott, again, I know you got to get out of here pretty quick. You've been around. We just talked about it since 1992. And you might not be able to answer this honestly, but did you really see 48 points coming in this game?
Oh, of course not.
Blink twice if you did.
Of course not. Who could have? And listen, I'll say what I said on our own podcast, which, by the way, is the Salty Dogs podcast. These are not your father's Buccaneers.
That's right.
This is not the type of Buccaneer team any fan from 92 or even before is used to seeing. This isn't the type. Warren Sapp didn't say, give me 40 points, and I guarantee you we'll win.
Say, what was 14, I think. 14
or,
when we need the game.
It's just, but I'll say this. And first of all, one game doesn't prove anything, right?
Yeah.
And
they could easily go out and score 13 against the Eagles.
Well, we won our first two game. We won our first game the last two seasons, and then didn't win game two. And before long, we were a game or two under 500. That needs to not happen again. Although it's against an awfully tough opening schedule.
Sure.
So we have not proven. The Bucs have not proven anything yet. But what I do think is relatively – I don't think this is a stretch to say this. I don't think this is me being a homer to say this. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you guys agree with me. This offense is legitimate.
Absolutely.
I think it's the most talented group of skill position players outside the running backs, but the wide receiver and tight ends that probably at one time this team's ever had.
Scott, I've watched this football team. I people that follow the Pewter Nation podcast know, started in 1977, sat down with my dad and watched them beat the Saints in 77 for their first game ever.
December 11th?
So there you go, 33-14 up in the Silverdome. I mean, not Silverdome, the Superdome, which you guys were just at. That's amazing that that stadium's still there. But anyway.
I wish it wasn't. I hate that place.
I've heard some horror stories about it, including an elevator that stopped, and it gave me a panic attack when somebody told me that yesterday. But that was the first game I watched. So anyway,
seriously, the first game you ever watched was the first
the first one. And I thought to myself, my dad,
hey, they're good.
I thought they're good. Yes, well, did I know
they won the next week too?
Yes, and you know what? Both coaches got fired. Hank Stram was fired, and Coryell was fired the next week. So the coach killers. But my point is there's no question about it, and I've said it many times when people ask me. This is by far, on paper, the most talented group of offensive players this team has had in their 43-year history. It's just, it's not even, I don't think it's close.
And then it sprang off the paper in that game. I mean, you could say the same thing about our defensive line on paper should be a lot better than last year, but we don't know that yet.
Yeah.
It has to still come together. Right. But
you know, and this offense should have been, this is what I'm a little worried about. Again, on paper, the defense should be much better than it was last year. But this offense should have been better last year than it was. So is it going to take another year for the defense to kind of catch up?
You know what, Mark? They've owned that. I mean, Monken has owned it. I mean, you may have been there for a couple of the times when he talked after practice during training camp where he was pretty he was pretty straightforward about
it. We chose to suck.
Yeah, and not just that, but then he got more specific about how they were terrible in practice and it showed up in games. He said this year, this is before this game, this is before any of the preseason games where they also scored well. We look a lot. We're practicing a lot better this year.
Yeah, and Dirk said that as well. And you know, we go back and we were a little critical of a softer camp last year. And you know, I give Dirk credit for looking at that and saying, you know what, we've got to be tougher. We've got to. And this was the toughest camp. Now again, with the NFL rules and the collective bargaining agreement, that's about as tough as you're going to see a training camp. Right. That's about as tough as you can have it, right?
Right.
The days of 30-minute goal line periods and tackling to the ground, those days are over.
They're gone.
Going back to my old days, going out to UT, watching the Ray Perkins three-a-days, I mean, that they would put you in jail today if you tried that. So, or your team would just say, you know what, we're out, we're quit. You know, I'm not doing this. But anyway, it was an impressive performance, as an impressive a performance as I've seen this offense. You know, really, you have to go back literally to the last time they scored 48 points, and that's when they were walking off the field in San Diego hoisting a trophy.
Yeah, and that offense wasn't nearly as dynamic as this one.
Say no.
It had two pretty good receivers. I like Keenan a lot, and Keyshawn, you know, he's pretty good.
Right.
Joe Jovicious was a nice.
But that was kind of a makeshift offensive line. Kenyatta Walker started
at right tackle. Yeah. And Roman Oben had been three of the five stars were brought in that year.
Yeah.
Kerry Jenkins and I can't remember the other one. And it was piecemeal. And they weren't very good actually for most of the season. The offensive line
was a weakness really for a lot of that
people
year.
People wrote about that a lot and they knew it. I remember Kenyatta Walker after the Super Bowl because I think they allowed one sack in the entire three game postseason.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him after Super Bowl talking big in the locker room, crowing, hey, you guys are ripping us, look at us now.
Yeah.
But I think this offensive line is a lot more talented. I think Ryan Jensen's made a big difference.
And I asked Dirk that and yesterday and Monken today, you know, how much of a difference does a guy can one guy make? You know, they paid him an awful lot of money to come here. But I think it showed. I went back and watched the game again last night. It's the third time I watched it, but I watched the coach's film of it. That guy, you know, I love his nastiness, his edge. I don't like 15-yard penalties. We know that those are going to occasionally happen with a guy like Ryan Jensen because he's not going to take kindly to his quarterback if he feels it was a cheap shot. But it just seems to me that it's kind of rubbed off on some other guys. I'm telling you. From Jensen to the left side, those are three nasty guys when they want to be. I wish Donovan was a little bit more, he's, you know, aggressive and nasty, but when he wants to be, he can dominate just as well. But there were plays when Marpet and Jensen were burying guys, not just blocking guys, burying them and trying to smother them in the turf at the Superdome. And I like that. And I think this team has had decent offensive linemen the last couple years. But I don't think enough can be said about the leadership that a guy like Logan Mankins had on these guys because they seem lost, you know, for a couple of years after Mankins.
Fair enough.
And Mankins came in that first year and didn't play as well as I think people expected him to. I think it was a big transition for him being traded there right at the end of preseason and having to move down here and be away from his family and all that stuff. But that second year, you know, Jason Light told us he got a text from Logan Mankins, who didn't text a whole lot, but he says, I'm going to make the Pro Bowl. And he says, enough, you know. And it was, you know, Logan wasn't a big talking kind of guy. And you saw it from the first day of OTAs during the offseason when he had his guys running sprints after practice. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a big rah-rah, get-in-your-face kind of guy. But you need that, and I think they're getting that from Jensen. And, you know, I'm an old-school guy, Scott. You know, and I said it earlier on, I don't even remember where I said it, somewhere on a podcast or a radio interview. Football ultimately comes down to who blocks the best and who tackles the best. It's still, and we saw that Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't complete those passes without all the time in the world back there. And you know, what was the difference between last year against the Saints in that game? It wasn't number three versus number 14 behind center. I think it was the five guys in front of both of those guys that made the biggest difference in this game. I think offensive line, you know, is not getting as much credit as they deserve. But you know what? That's kind of offensive linemen. They usually just get hammered when the yellow flag comes out. They play 70 plays a game. 69 are great, but they have a holding penalty and everybody hates them.
It's up to us to give them the love then, Mark. I did on Monday.
Yeah.
Stories saying they deserved a lot of credit.
Yeah, that's true. Game. That's true. And I've tried to pump that up a little bit as well. Now, again, if they go out and Fitzpatrick gets sacked six times, then I'm going to hate him again.
They have a tough challenge this week with that line.
They really do. They really do.
Is that really the biggest – you think that's probably the biggest challenge for him? Because a lot of people, you know, are just – they want to know about the matchup and everything about what makes the Eagles so dangerous. And Cutter was asked a little bit about it today, and he said, you know, the defensive line is tough.
I think that's their strongest unit, and is, you know, top to bottom. And they have, you know, like they did last year, and like we were trying to emulate by taking a couple of their guys.
Yeah,
want to go 8 and 9 deep, right, and keep fresh legs on you all the time. That said, I do think that's a matchup that we can handle fine with the way our offensive line is playing. I think we can hold up against them. I'm a little more worried about the reverse – because they have a very good offensive line.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul came back to practice today, so hopefully he's going to be able to play. But we didn't have a ton of impact from that defensive line, and I think there's no Vita Vea yet, and I think they're still trying to figure it out, put it all together.
Scott, I watched that game again, watching it last night, watching the coaches film. They missed at least three sacks.
Well, yeah.
At least three.
Nassim, but Nassim.
How in the world did he not get
Breeze? He, like, clubbed him across the face.
But this guy, Breeze, is a master at taking one step.
I know, it's ridiculous.
A little slide step.
I don't know how he got away from JPP straight
in
the middle.
Yeah, I mean.
He looked like he was going to get buried.
I thought so, too. And it's like a it was like some movie where all of a sudden there's this invisible force field that they bounce off of right before they get the Breeze. I mean, it was
like
crazy.
Flickers in and out of existence.
Right. It's very odd.
One yard over.
But it was proof that we talk about. If you give a quarterback, and it doesn't have to be a Hall of Famer like Drew Breeze or a future Hall of Famer like Drew Breeze, if you give a quarterback enough time, they're going to pick you apart. The secondary can't cover that long.
That's the NFL today.
It really is.
That's the number one thing you have to know about your team, when you're watching your team in the NFL this year, no matter who it is and who you're playing, if you give any quarterback in maybe not Nathan Peterman.
Yeah, right.
But almost any quarterback in this league time, he's going to complete a lot of passes.
No, he is. Scott, I'm hungry. Are you hungry?
Yeah.
You're always hungry. I know Trevor's hungry. This guy's got tapeworms. He eats like crazy.
That's true.
I just have a hankering. For some reason, I have a hankering for a hamburger. Do you, Trevor?
I mean, I do now that you've said it, and I've got a visual in my head.
Yes, a visual of a nice, big, juicy bison burger. Not even just a hamburger, a bison
burger.
From
a certain place, though.
From a certain place, one of our wonderful sponsors at Ford's Garage.
There you go.
Multiple locations across the Bay Area. I think tonight is a – actually, by the way, I introduced myself as Mark. I should introduce myself as Bandit because I've decided this week I'm going to be only going to answer to Burt Reynolds, Smokey, Bandit, you know, because I'm a big Burt Reynolds guy. I'm actually going tonight because Burt Reynolds, Smokey and the Bandit's playing at AMC and Brandon. $5 tonight, by the way. But before I go there, I'm going to stop by Ford's Garage.
Have one of the best burgers that there is.
Because I feel like Burt would enjoy a bison burger.
You know,
Burt looks like a guy that would enjoy a bison burger.
Got to do it in his
burger.
Honor.
Exactly.
Noel's great.
I think I'm going to go in there smoking a cigarette, too, and chewing some gum real hard, wearing
a
cowboy hat.
I wouldn't do that.
No?
No,
not do that?
No, just go. Just the burger is
good.
The burger is good.
All right. I will take Sally Fields if she's available to go with me, though. That would be nice.
Yes.
But Ford's Garage, located all over Central Florida. New locations popping up all over the place. The latest location in Lakeland. We're going to be doing a live podcast in October at some point with Darius Glanton there. And we want you to make sure to go check them out. Visit Ford's Garage. even if you're in Dearborn, Michigan, listening to this podcast, there's a Ford's Garage for you. If you're down south in Estero, Florida, there's a Ford's Garage for you. And you know what? I drive a Chevrolet. They've never keyed my car. It's okay. They're all inclusive. You could probably even drive a Toyota in there.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty impressive. So go check out Ford's Garage. Make sure to let them know that you have heard about them on the Pewter Nation podcast, and make sure to tweet out your pictures and tag Ford's Garage and Pewter Report. When you do that, we will retweet, and we will follow you if you do that. How about that? People are always saying, why can't I get a follow?
Well, if you, you know, go to Ford's Garage,
that's right.
Take a picture of your food
yep.
before and after, shout them out, tag Ford's Garage,
yep.
we will
absolutely
follow you.
Yes, and I mean, we will unfollow you the next day. But for 24 hours, I'm just kidding. I mean, we might, depending on your account. But I always go through and look at what people are tweeting, and I'm like, okay, unfollow. But depending on what they tweet out. But anyway, I follow them on my personal account because it doesn't matter. But anyway, Ford's Garage, check them out. Scotty, I know you got to get out of here, my friend. Oh, you're good for a little bit longer. This is awesome.
I know.
Bonus Scott Smith coverage.
I know.
You know, and Scott, I know that you have to be really, really angry because about 2 years ago,
I know what you're gonna say.
Channel 8 hired another Scott Smith. You know how many times I went to look you up on my phone to call to ask you a question and his number pops up too? Luckily, I haven't actually hit dial. Actually, I have, but I hung up real fast before he answered. But, yeah, there's another Scott Smith.
You know,
but let people know you're the original.
I'd like to say that, but when your name is Scott Smith, you kind of get used to the fact that there are lots of you around.
Actually,
I played
– You literally have the most common name in the Northern America hemisphere or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, my entire Little League baseball career when I was a kid, I was on a baseball team with another Scott Smith. So
every
I was
year,
just Smitty.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he was Scott. I mean,
do people say like when they meet another Smith that he's there? Are you guys related? Wouldn't that be something? It's like
the bassist for the Romantics was named Scott Smith. I think he's dead.
Oh, great!
Okay.
Way to go!
Well,
yeah. way to bring the podcast
there was
down.
There was
outlived
a mayor.
It's fine.
Oh, you know what? I can clear all this up if I just went by my actual name.
Wait, is your actual name not Scott
well,
Smith?
Well,
it's Luther name. Johnson.
My first name is actually Roger.
Whoa.
Scott is my middle
name.
So,
okay, I always want to know this about people. Why did – Scott's your middle name, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, how does that happen?
There's no good excuse for it.
So did your parents –
yeah,
you just start
calling
Scott?
It's
going to change their mind when you're – I don't really call him Roger.
I don't like that.
That doesn't sound good.
I have wonderful, extremely nice parents, but that's the worst thing they ever did to me. I never got beaten or anything. I always was well-fed, but they – Don't ever, young parents out there, don't ever do that to your kids. Do not name your kids. Do not call them by their middle name because it's a pain in the, I don't know what you're allowed to say on this
Anything
podcast.
You want.
It's a pain in the ass. And it got worse after 9/11 because now you have, flying and so
oh,
on.
Sure.
I'm Roger Smith whenever I travel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm changing that name in the phone
the
so
place
I don't get mixed up.
You're
going to be Roger Smith
fine.
In my phone now.
No, what happened, my dad's name was Roger, but not Roger Smith. He had a different, not Roger Scott.
Right.
He didn't. I'm not a junior.
Okay.
They both claim that it was the other one that wanted to do it that way. My mom and my dad both blame each other. Neither of them will take the blame for it. Why they didn't just name me Scott?
I just always wondered.
It doesn't make any sense.
This isn't. It's not that uncommon.
Trevor, what's your middle name? We don't know that.
James.
That's boring.
Boring.
Wow.
I'm glad my parents didn't call me by my middle name.
Yeah. Trevor James. That's pretty good.
I think
it rolls
off the
tongue.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm glad my parents didn't start calling me by my middle name of Johan.
Is that really your middle name?
Yes.
This is the last podcast we talked, right?
Yeah,
or no.
There
was one before that we talked about this. And he said his middle name was Johan. And I said, I do not believe you. And he showed me his government sanctioned identification.
Yeah,
and it is right there. It says Johan.
Now, this week it's Burt Reynolds.
Burt Johan Reynolds.
Or Buddy. I'll go by Buddy. That was Burt's nickname.
Smokey and the Bandit is a great movie.
It is a great, great movie.
It really
is. It's a classic. And when's the next time I'm going to get an opportunity to see it on a big screen? This is probably the last time.
I was going to say, you can run across on cable all the time.
Right.
And then you're stuck.
Yeah, but then they have to change all the words because it's on cable, right?
That's true.
I'm going to get the foul mouth Burt Reynolds, the rated R version.
The real Burt Reynolds.
Right. Anyway, classic movie. Looking ahead again, we've talked a little bit about the Eagles and some of the problems that this team will present to the Buccaneers, and you talked about Zach Ertz. Who else on this offense, Trevor, puts a little fear in you if you're Mike Smith?
I mean, I just think that it's kind of the collective of everything that they do. Doug Peterson's just really good at his job of making sure that as a defense, you're on your toes. That, Nelson Agholor, we could talk about him as a top receiver-ish going into this year, but Nelson Agholor struggled early on in his NFL career, and then all of a sudden it was kind of just this renaissance for him, and he now is a focal part of that offense. And that's just because I think they've got more creative with him. They mm-hmm. found out what he does best. And again, it's a lot like what we saw from the Buccaneers last week. When you put your skill guys in their best position to succeed, the rest is, I don't want to say easy, but it makes it as easy as it can. And so, you know, you're not trying to get somebody to maybe run a route that they're not as comfortable with, right. or be a yards after catch guy if they're not, or be a heavy like catch in the air, catch through traffic guy if they're not. Instead, they're putting these guys in. And that's, I think, as a collective, what makes the Eagles so difficult to defend. Of course, that's why they scored so many points as they did throughout the playoffs and the Super Bowl, is because you truly, with the Eagles, have to account for everyone. And that's a really tough challenge for this Buccaneers team, I think, because especially down the two starting corners that they are. You know, groin injuries are really tough. I'm obviously not going to sit here and rule Brent Grimes out, but anytime you've been out for a little bit with a groin injury, it's hard to...
I'm ruling him out.
Okay, I mean, it's hard to see you
he
come back.
He didn't practice
back.
Today. It's Thursday. I'm ruling
it's
him out.
It's hard to see you come back, right, go through a walkthrough and expect him to play. And so you're going to have rookies going up against guys that are very familiar with what they do well on that offense, and it's going to be tough. I think it's just going to be tough as a collective.
This is a crazy stat. Scott, verify if this is true, because you are... the master of stats and trivial
really
information.
Yeah, you, because like I covered this, last year was my first year obviously officially on the beat, and I'd be in the press box and either like during the game or after the game, before the game, whatever, you tweet something out, I'm like, how the hell did he know that?
Scott
how
Smith,
does he know that?
He just knows it.
How does he know that?
Built in. Now, ask Scott where his car keys are right now. He can't tell you, but he can tell you how many yards Eric Rett had against the Packers in 1996 when he came back after that game, after the holdout. They lost 13-7. I'm weird like that, too. I can remember, you know, every stat from my childhood, but...
That wasn't the most effective holdout of all time.
No, that was a bad one. Yeah. That was a bad one. I was actually traveling with the team. Scott, I actually sat on your row. You had dark hair then.
And wait, this is a podcast. I mean, they can't see me.
Well, okay, let's just. I'm gonna. I'll tweet out his picture in a little while. But he had very dark hair. But I think you and Zach.
Zach Bolno
was an intern. I think we sat on the same row. But on the way home, I had a. It wasn't a laptop per se. It was a word processor type computer. And I remember Eric Rett was like, he had one too. He just bought one, but I don't think he had charged it. And he's like, hey man, let me borrow your computer or let me borrow your laptop. Or and I was like. But I'm working because, yeah. You know, at the time I'm transcribing quotes on the flight home. And, yeah, that wasn't a great holdout for him. I remember that. That was a disappointing game. I will say this, not that anybody cares, but if you ever have an opportunity to go to Lambeau Field, you walk out on the field and you just feel the history of the NFL on that field. And, again, they've remodeled it completely extensively. When I was up there in 96, it still had, like, metal siding around it. I mean, it looked like it did when Vince Lombardi
Lambeau
walked
it. Lambeau was awesome. That was the one that last year I was like, I have to go to at least this one, you know, whether the Buccaneers were good or
they
not.
They still have that expanded metal, though, you know, like where the stands are around the fence around
yeah,
it.
No, it's,
and
yeah,
you
it's
watch
right.
old clips of Vince Lombardi in that Ice Bowl in 67 against Dallas, and literally it's that same expanded metal yep. there, you know. Yep. It's
like
a lot.
And over.
Yeah, yeah.
My two favorite parts about Lambeau are, one, it's like it's just plopped down right in the middle of a neighborhood. Just a regular old neighborhood.
Yes.
And then, two, the tunnel from the locker room mm-hmm. out through the end zone that the yep. players come out, and it's just this, it feels like it feels like football.
Yes.
Yep.
There's no doubt about it.
Coming down the stairs
yep.
in your cleats, clack, 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 and yep. then there's that long, narrow tunnel.
Yeah, right underneath the goalpost.
Awesome. Yeah, it's so cool.
It would be the stadium that is in heaven if there is football in heaven. It would be something like
that. Oh, there's football in heaven.
You sure?
Yeah, Steve Spurrier said it all the time. God smiled on the Gators, remember?
No, he still does.
No, not last week.
No, he does.
No, he didn't smile last week. You know, he played a cruel joke.
God
he smiled on the Wildcats
puts
last week.
Through trials, but only ones that he doesn't feel like they can't overcome, you know?
He doesn't give you guys more than you can handle.
Not on the Northwestern Wildcats, he didn't. We lost to Duke.
We lose to Duke
every year.
Ugh, that's not good, Scott. Well. Not good at all. All right, where are we at on time here? I don't even know. I haven't even been paying attention. We're about 30 in.
Can the offense have as good of a day, you think?
No.
48.
All
right, that's an unfair question.
Again, it's been how many years since they scored 48 again, and before that it was a long time.
No.
No.
You're talking before the Super Bowl? Yeah. We had a 48 against New Orleans in 2000. Or 2001.
Okay, I guess I'm going all the way back to like a Falcons game.
1987,
like
the opener
yeah.
with Steve yeah. Berg throwing five touchdowns.
Yeah, that's right.
But
okay.
Do you think it's going to be a shootout, though? Or what do you think?
Going to have to be another shootout. Not a 48-40, but I think it's going to have to be a 31-28 type game. Again, I will say this. I'm not this huge guy that thinks this heat is this great advantage for the Buccaneers.
Yeah, I think it's a
talking
point.
I do think in this game it can be a difference because it's early September.
Maybe fair.
And you know, it gets warm in Pennsylvania certainly, but not the type of heat we have here in Florida. But the thing is, though, Ryan Fitzpatrick told me today when we were in his interview, I asked him about, you know, the Eagles. You know, he said they're deep. It's not just the four. I mean, they've got a lot of guys.
Sure, right, right.
Who was the big nose tackle they signed? I can't.
Kolodi Nata.
Yeah.
He's
playing less than 50%.
He played 17 snaps.
17 yeah. snaps.
That
I mean,
just tells you how good they
are, man. This guy's a $10 million a year guy.
Michael Bennett played like 44 snaps, so he was involved.
Right.
Oh, no, they good get a friend good, Michael Bennett.
They get a really good rotation
I
there.
Love Michael Bennett.
He was a great guy to interview.
He's great. You know, I will say this, though, about the offense, because somebody was asking me on Twitter about kind of matchups, things like that. I will just say that the Eagles – they play a similar type of aggressive defensive style than the Saints. I'm not sure how much man coverage they're necessarily going to play as opposed to like a cover three or something like that, just because with zone built in, like with the linebackers and everything like that, because I'm sure that they got the tape of the Saints game and saw that when the Saints did go man, I mean, yeah, this is not just Mike Evans saying this to Cape for his team. One-on-one, I'd take Mike Evans against basically any corner in the league one-on-one.
Right.
I'd take Chris Godwin against basically every CB2 in the league. You know, if Deshaun's playing and he's in the slot, what are you going to ask a slot player, a linebacker to cover Deshaun? You know what I'm saying? So the more you play man and the more aggressive you are, which the Eagles tend to play a lot of single high a lot, you could see a fair amount of the same types of matchups that we saw last week with the Saints just by nature of what the Eagles have shown over the last year or so. Now, every year is a little bit different. Every week is a little bit different on top of that. And so I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of adjustment here and there. They're not going to probably hang their – man, the Saints were confident that Marshawn Lattimore was going to be able to handle
and
Mike
I'll
Evans.
Be honest with you, I was too. Because he had good success last year against this guy.
Because they did not give Marshawn Lattimore any help. And
yeah, that was him lying on the turf as Mike was running.
Yes,
for the
and yeah, there were many other ones where it was like whenever, even when there was single high safety help, the safety was looking obviously to the other side. Mm-hmm. He was like, okay, Marshawn's got to my right on Evans, but I'll kind of fade over to this other way in case there needs to be help on the other side. And so
these are the exact same. These are the exact things, Trevor, you're mentioning that we envisioned this offense becoming last year when they brought DeSean Jackson here because of what he can do to open up underneath O.J. Howard's, the Cam Brates, the Chris Godwins, and the Mike Evans.
Right.
And it finally, everything came together.
If you're looking for a breakout player, just for me, I think it's going to be O.J. Howard because the Eagles like to play when the Eagles play nickel defense, if they're sending a little corner out there, their corners are either Avante Maddox, Jalen Mills, or Sidney Jones. All of those guys are under 6 foot.
Yeah.
All of them. Yeah. And so they are much more adapt to handle guys like Humphreys, guys like DeSean Jackson. I think that they would be a good assignment there. But, you know, what Scott was talking about earlier in the podcast, if you send out a personnel that looks like, oh, it could be this, that, and then all of a sudden you've got Avante Maddox, who's like 5'8 on O.J. Howard.
Yeah.
It's literally a free play.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a really key matchup.
Well, why don't you bet on it, mister, since you're so confident? Why don't you
– You know what?
Why don't you put your money where your mouth is?
Maybe I will.
I just wish I knew a place where you could do that.
Actually, I do.
What? You do?
Mybookie.ag.
That's right.
The place that I'm going to go to put my entire mortgage
on
O.J. Howard having 200 yards.
I highly recommend you do not do that.
But if I wanted to,
sure,
I could.
That's the place to do
it. I could. And the best part about mybookie.ag is if you go there, let's say, you know, casual guy, you want to throw in some $50 to bet throughout the season. If you do it and use the promo code Pewter.
P-E-W-T-E-R.
Not only will I get
not
that $50.
Not P-O-O-T-E-R. Pewter, not pooter.
All right. I will get an extra $50.
They're going to match your deposit?
Of the fine folks over at mybookie.ag, and so I'll have $100 to play with.
What if you put in $1,000?
You know, I'm not sure about the cash limit, but I believe that they'll match it.
That's pretty sweet. That's a pretty good deal
They're
right there.
They're probably not going to match, you know, if you put in $1 million.
No, I'm not going to give you another million. If they did, I would put a million in and then immediately just cash out.
Yeah,
after
I don't.
The 2 million
you can't do
credit.
That either.
Can't do that.
Yeah.
All right, they're pretty smart with that.
They actually want you to enjoy the bet. Which Scott, not this Scott, the
not
other
me.
Scott.
Yeah, not that one.
Scott actually won some money last week. So.
Yes,
it can again, be done, folks.
I hope
it
Scott realized IRS is listening to his podcast as well. He's got to report that over $600. Over the course
I don't
of 12
think it was
months,
$600, but
no, but he's he did well on college football and on the NFL, and you can really bet any sport going on right now. Plenty of prop bets, things like that. Mybookie.ag,
so
check them out. Use the code word pewter, and they will match your initial deposit.
So that'd be my little, like I guess X's and O's little kind of matchup to watch for. Scott, do you have a different one? Do you have anyone in mind where you kind of look at it and be like, oh, this could
think,
be a key? To
I think advantage. The obvious answer is that offensive line. Lane Johnson's an All Pro.
Sure. Yeah.
Brandon Brooks is a Pro Bowler.
Yep.
Jason Kelce is an All-Pro. Jason Peters was
hurt
a lot last year, yeah, but he's been to like 67 Pro Bowls.
They're so good.
Stefan Wisniewski is the other guard, right?
Yep.
I don't know much about
Wisniewski.
Him. But
he's been solid, I guess.
You know, if we can't.
By the way, Scott's the only one that can say "we" because he
works
actually
is,
right.
He is.
He actually is wearing the Buccaneer
still
red shirt.
Still trying not to, but I can't help.
I make fun
no,
of people.
On game days,
that
he's
that
in
don't.
The
also.
Fierce.
I can go. I can go get.
No, he's not.
Sorry,
he's spouting off stats.
Sorry,
I can
right.
go get one of those really tasty sounding hamburgers at Ford's
Garage,
but I cannot do the other one you just got. As an
no,
NFL
oh.
employee.
No, absolutely
in fact,
not.
I just got done taking the mandatory. League video testing thing about gambling. And
oh, really?
I definitely cannot.
Yes, no.
Sounds like a lot of fun for you guys.
Right,
let's
right.
make it clear here that
sure.
I'm not going to do that.
Sure.
No, everybody's worried about those rookie cornerbacks as well. You should be.
Right.
I don't care. I like them a lot. I think they're going to be very good players.
I do too.
But they're still rookies in their second game ever,
right.
and now they're going to be playing a ton. And Ryan Smith is still relatively inexperienced
mm-hmm.
as well. Marcus Williams just got here. Javian Elliott hasn't played much in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So if those guys it goes back to what we were talking to just a little while ago, talking about just a little while ago, if those guys are left out there trying to cover too long, it's going to be a problem. And I know
yeah.
Nick Foles didn't have a great first game, but he's yeah. been a buck killer.
He didn't, have a, good pro se-
good didn't have a good
preseason either.
Right.
You know, it doesn't look like the same guy. And you know what? I mentioned earlier about you being the stat genius, and I was going to get you to verify something that Trevor threw us off, and I never asked you. But I believe this is accurate that I read – that the Eagles won a Super Bowl last year without a 1,000-yard rusher, a 1,000-yard receiver, and not a 10-sack guy, which just
right.
goes
team.
To show you.
Yeah,
team.
Yeah, Brandon Graham had like 9.5 as
right.
the main guy.
Right.
I still think Fletcher Cox is the more important guy in there. But
yes.
He's so good.
Brandon Graham made the play in the Super Bowl, too, the one yeah. sack in 94 dropbacks or something like that.
Is nobody scared about Darren Sproles? All 4 foot, 17 of him?
I mean, maybe.
But is he your top worry?
No. Not my top worry.
I'm excited for MJ Stewart, just to build off of what Scott was saying. He's, I mean, the fact that against the Titans in that preseason game, he had 2 forced fumbles in the first half, like, that just shows you.
Carlton Davis had a couple, he didn't have any in this New Orleans game, but
mm-hmm.
he had at least 2 plays where he was coming up from the guy from behind, and
he
had
he was
a nice
going to rip.
Chop.
Yeah.
In a rip. He had
yep,
a nice
yep.
rip, and I'm like, they're doing, somebody in that group is doing a good, maybe it's Levante, but somebody's doing a good job of teaching these young guys that technique, because they're all doing it.
Yeah, I mean, Vern got a forced fumble. Obviously,
right.
Quan punched it out. And I saw on another play in particular where they had 2 guys. I can't even remember who it was, but they had 2 guys tackling one dude. And the second that he knew the player was going to the ground, I can't remember which buck it was, but he tried to get his hand in under that ball and just rip it right
Chris
out.
Chris Conte ripped the ball out of Gillislee's arm early in the first half in that game. Now, he ended up being ruled down. But
mm-hmm.
these guys, and I do like that aggressiveness. And you know what? Until this defense really gets its feet underneath them, they're going to have to be opportunistic with turnovers. I think that's going to be the key. This game, the Buccaneers are going to have to win the turnover battle if they're going to have a chance against the Eagles. I mean, I love what they did offensively last week.
Yep.
They're going to have to, if it is going to be a track meet, then it turns into which team turns the ball over less, and the Buccaneers were able to not do it at all last
verbatim,
year.
That's verbatim, something Monken said.
Yeah, no, that's true.
No, or maybe it was Smith, but same. No, I think it was Monken. If it's going to be a track meet, the turnovers are going to make the difference.
Yep, absolutely.
You know what these young corners, these college guys need to do is remember that you have to touch a guy down when he's lying on the ground.
That's a fact.
It takes too long for those guys to get that.
Yeah.
It happens
yeah.
all the time.
Yep.
But you know
yep.
what? Adarius was standing right there. He's no college rookie.
No,
I was like, what are you thinking?
Chicken.
There had to have been a whistle blown on the field.
No,
there was.
No, no, no. He blew the whistle the
okay.
second the guy went down.
Okay.
And that's why he
but
called it
But still, touch him. It's
yeah.
the same
the
thing as picking up a loose ball.
The
right.
ref shouldn't have blown
right.
his whistle, and he did. And
yeah.
that's why the
yeah.
Saints fans are pissed about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Well, I'll tell you another thing. You know, there's a bad hurricane over on the East Coast, but over on the Gulf Coast, Scott, smooth sailing. You know what that means?
No.
It means if you have a boat, if you have any marine need, Scott, there's a place right here in Tampa that's been in business since 1948. They're called T.A. Mahoney's, and they will have you covered. Do you have a boat?
I don't have a boat.
But every man wants a boat. We dream of boats.
Sure.
And one of these days, he may have a boat. And if he does, Trevor, where should he go if he needs any boating needs?
I mean, the only place.
The only place.
Is T.A. Mahoney's.
T.A. Mahoney's. Family owned and operated since 1948. They're doing a great thing this weekend. They're having what they call their yard sale. And it's going to be benefiting some youth organizations. So if you're free on Saturday, go to T.A. Mahoney's. Go check them out. They're on Adamo and 50th Street in Tampa. Go check out their selection of used. They're going to have some used boats for sale if you're in the market for a boat. They're also going to have fishing rods, tackle, all kind of things they're going to have. They're available at discounted prices, and the proceeds will go to benefit some youth football. I mean, some youth fishing and organizations. Take a kid fishing type places. So go check them out. T.A. Mahoney's. Tell them Pewter Nation sent you. And anyway, we appreciate TAMahoneyCo.com being a proud sponsor of the Pewter Nation podcast. No more sponsors, Scott. We're good. We've determined you can go to Ford's and you can go to T.A. Mahoney's.
I could go to T.A. Mahoney's. I would be a total novice if I walked in. So, but I'm sure the service would be great.
That's the great part about them.
And they love the Bucks. So,
absolutely. Big Bucks fans.
Well, then I love them.
All right, we will have another podcast on Sunday following the big Buccaneer win that Scott Reynolds told me earlier. He's predicting a Buccaneers win.
Nice.
We'll have our predictions and our situation of what's going to happen in the game up on Saturday. Check that out. We've got plenty of coverage today as well. The Pewter Nation podcast going up, of course. Scott's Fab Five on Friday. Scott's Reynolds, not Scott Smith's. But check out Buccaneers.com and all the great work they do. Excellent reading. You'll learn a lot. And, yes, they're the home team. But you know what? They're fair. I think you're pretty darn fair for being a home team guy.
Yeah.
I
mean, y'all do an awesome job. I've noticed that over the last just even 2 or 3 years, how teams have started to really kind of ramp up how they cover themselves and the journalism that they do. And of course. But I think you guys
have added
really
Carmen, who does a tremendous job as well.
Yep.
She's
really good.
Casey. She's got really good. Casey does a tremendous job. They do all kind of video features. They have their own podcast as well. So make sure to check them out at Buccaneers.com.
I like the Anthony Beck play breakdown every Monday too.
Anthony's good. Always good to
he'll
get
show
a
you
former
exactly
guys.
He'll show you exactly why DeSean Jackson was wide open on that 58-yard touchdown.
There you go.
AB's the man. All right. Well, we appreciate it for Scott Reynolds, who's not with us. He's alive. He's just not with us in person here. For Scott Smith, for Trevor Sikma, I'm Mark Cooks, and we'll see you next week for another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.